We can understand that our part of the world is prone to drought and still not completely understand why. What is it that causes some years, like this one, to feature abundant precipitation while others do not? Redding is more than 5 inches above average for precipitation in just this calendar year, which is a huge difference from recent years. The Pacific jet stream comes into focus as a major factor in the distribution of moisture in California, and therefore is a factor in the intensity of wildfire seasons. A team of researchers looked into jet stream actions now and well into the past. Alan Taylor, a professor of geography at Penn State, is part of that team and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Taylor, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be here.
Very good to have you. Before we even get to the specifics of the research, help us understand what a jet stream is.
Well, a jet stream are high-altitude winds. If you've been in an airplane, they're flying at about 30,000 feet, and the jet stream that we worked with is the winds that steer moisture and storms into the West Coast. And so depending on where the location of the jet stream is, it will deliver moisture to that location. And so it's basically steering.
All right, so
storms.
It's like a current in the sky, then, that guides things along. Okay.
That's right. Go ahead.
When we talk about it as a jet stream, how fast are we talking about here?
We're talking, 100 to 200 kilometers per hour, so very high wind speeds, and we don't feel them near the surface, so these are high elevation winds.
So it's always there in the atmosphere, but like an ocean current, it'll move around a bit?
That's exactly right. And depending on where it moves, you're going to get different amounts of moisture being delivered. And in California, all that moisture is in the winter. So if you don't get it, it's going to be also much drier that year.
So how did you and the other researchers come to focus on the jet stream?
Well, because it's so important, California has a wet, dry climate. Dry in the summer and wet in the winter, and that wetness is basically related to where the jet stream comes into California. And so it's this atmospheric circulation mechanism, and we wanted to understand how storms related to that. No one has ever reconstructed that over time, and so we did that using climate models and tree ring data and identified where it goes into the state of California on average in really wet years and really dry years. And then looked at the relationship between the wet and the dry years and the jet stream and fire activity. So we were able to link those things together. It took all of us, all the expertise in the team, to do this.
And there were, I should point out, there are 4 people on the team, Eugene Wall, Eduardo Zarita, Valerie Truet, and you. And,
yep,
that's
right.
The publication in PNAS, the March 4th issue, that's the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I want to make that clear. Jet Stream Dynamics, Hydroclimate, and Fire in California from 1600 CE to present. So you mentioned going back in time. You went all the way back to 1600?
That's right. Yeah, we were able to, with tree ring data, able to relate where moisture patterns come into California using a gridded information on drought. And so where it's wet, it leaves basically a pattern of wetness, and we were able to relate that to simulation models and actually reconstruct where the jet stream each year was coming into California on average. And so we looked at just the extreme wet and extreme dry condition. And so when the jet stream is coming into L.A. Or over L.A. on average, it's a really wet year in California, and when it comes in, the average position is Redding, it tends to be a dry year. And up until about 1900, when you had a dry year, you had high fire activity, which makes perfect sense. And in a wet year, you had low fire activity. But that relationship breaks down around 1900, which is when fire suppression became very effective. And it essentially disappears after the mid-70s. And the fire activity is related to recent warming of the atmosphere.
All right. I want to come back to this, that particular part of it, just a moment. We're talking again with Alan Taylor, professor of geography at Penn State University, about the Pacific jet stream and its influence on California precipitation. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Just in terms of going back and getting stuff like the tree ring data, this is, for an amateur weather geek like me, this is fascinating stuff. It's a field of paleoclimatology?
That's right, paleoclimatology and paleofire ecology, because we were also reconstructed fire activity back to 1600 using scars in trees. So the annual ring width that a tree has is influenced by climate. And so wide rings, for example, might be wet years and narrow rings, dry years. And so there's a gridded set of data for Western North America that you can that allows you to look at spatial patterns of where wet and dry occurs. And we had this fire record that we developed over a period of about 15 years for the whole Sierra Nevada. And so the scale of the fire activity we were measuring and the scale of drought and the jet stream were sort of at the right scale. And then we were able to look at how human activity over different time periods, for example, when the Spanish came into California, there was a depopulation due to diseases in Native Americans, and fire activity went up because Native American burning declined. And then the 49ers came in, and that reduced fire activity. And then when they started grazing animals in the forest, that reduced fire activity even more because the grazing animals eat fuel, essentially grass, and then when fire suppression came in. And so we had these different sociological activities in this 400-year period, and the jet stream climate relationship was consistent across all of those until we got to 1900 with the fire suppression, and that really changed things because we're very good at putting out fires.
All right, so that was where things got decoupled between
that's
the
right.
relationship between moisture and intensity of fire season. Let me understand that, because it sounds like really painstaking work. If you're counting tree rings here, you got to be sure you're dealing with the right years. Are we really talking about you have to make sure that this is 1685 or something?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's using the science of dendrochronology, if you think of what a barcode looks like on something you get in the grocery, you're matching these ring patterns over time. Yeah, so you have to have the annual resolution worked out. And in California, a lot of that is tied to dry years, and so you can cross date it, and you can use that to go back much further in time, or take a piece of wood from the forest floor that or a stump or something that doesn't have outside, and so you can go back a very long time using that kind of science. It's a great tool.
So you have nearly 450 years of data points from the trees about fire and precipitation, but how far back do the records on the movements of the jet itself go? And are you confident enough that in these years that there was moisture getting delivered, the jet was in the place that corresponded with that?
Yeah, we reconstructed the jet stream using climate models to 1571, and so there's very good correspondence. And then we, for the recent period, we calibrated the paleo models with the contemporary records. So we have very good correspondence there. So we're pretty confident that that part is well constrained. And what's I think really unusual is we did go forward a little bit and looked at what climate predictions suggest about precipitation in California. And a lot of those data suggest that it might get a little bit moister, but that's going to be overridden, which would suggest maybe that fire activity might decline, but that's going to be overridden by the warming temperatures because snow melt will occur earlier in the spring, the summers are getting warmer, and so even though it may get moister in California in the future, it's going to be so warm that it's going to begin to override any sort of additional moisture effect.
So we get drier because we are warmer. Therefore, there won't be as much snowpack. For example, things will fall as rain instead of snow.
That's right. Yeah, and if you look at the record that we developed, California had a pretty extreme situation in 2015 and 16. It was, I think, the lowest snowpack in 500 years or something. Treering, one of the co-authors, reconstructed the snowpack in the Sierra Nevada back for 500 years, and that year had the lowest snowpack in 500. The next year was an extremely wet year. I think snowpack was 164% of normal, and that should have been a low fire year. And the jet stream was sort of in that sort of condition where it was centered more towards Los Angeles, and we had the Tubbs fire in the Bay Area.
Okay, so here again, it's because fire suppression's been going on that there's just more fuel to burn out there.
That's right, and that combination has never happened in that in the 400-year record that we had. So it sort of saying something about what we can expect in the future.
Alan Taylor, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, professor of geography at Penn State, one of the authors of the study Jet Stream Dynamics, Hydroclimate, and Fire in California from 1600 CE to present. You can join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the exchange.
Yes, good morning. I have been thinking about jet streams for the last 2 or 3 years especially. And the question I have is, when you have a lessening of the differential temperature between the Arctic and the mid-latitudes here, is that causing the jet stream to be less energetic and more unstable?
Okay.
The Arctic oscillation, you know, the jet stream changes its position all the time, right? So you can think of it as being sort of a wavy figure that circles the globe. And so it's influenced by, you know, what happens up in the Arctic. For example, where I live here in Pennsylvania, the jet stream this winter moved south quite a bit in the winter, so we got very cold temperatures. And so it's we're looking sort of at average conditions over long periods of time in the reconstruction that we did, not sort of what happens in a particular short period of time. So it's hard to relate what he said to our reconstruction. But there is certainly a relationship between what happens up in the Arctic and what happens here in terms of the air masses that get moved around by the jet stream.
Yeah, Carter, thanks for that call and that question. So is it just position? Is that the only aspect of the Pacific jet stream that would seem to be the best determinant of where the moisture falls?
Yeah, and also the velocity. The more intense, the higher the velocity, the more intense the storm. So those are the two measures that we used, the location and intensity. And so, you know, high velocity winds are bringing in more storms off the Northeast Pacific and delivering more moisture. So those are the two indices we used.
Did you factor in any of the El Nino or La Nina effects?
We didn't put those in specifically, but certainly, you know, they're well known to influence what happens on an interannual basis for sure, and they're included sort of in the climate modeling in the background. You know, depending on where you are in California, particularly up in the north, you don't have a consistent relationship between El Nino and La Nina and wet and dry years, particularly up in Northern California.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let me get this again. If the jet stream falls generally over Southern California, that indicates what?
Very wet conditions for the Sierra Nevada or most of California, because the jet is to the south, and that's delivering moisture to the south, and all the area north of that is going to be getting moisture. And then when it's up over Redding, you know, basically areas north of that are getting the moisture, but not us, not most of California.
So, and that correlation still exists, you're saying, though? I mean,
that's right. Mm-hmm. For wetness and jet stream, that's correct, but it doesn't for fire activity.
All right, and part of that is that, as we just talked about a moment ago, the wetness is going to be different, but based on temperature.
Yeah, and we're also just very good at putting out fires. And so most fires are extinguished, and so it doesn't necessarily track the wet and dry condition anymore. It's when weather becomes more extreme. We can't catch a fire if it's ignited like we had last summer and last fall. And so it's not as tightly linked.
So how tightly linked, though, are still the precipitation and the jet stream? Are we talking 70% causality, 90% causality?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was at the extremes we looked at, right? So we're looking at the top 10% or bottom 10% of the distribution. It tracks just fine. It's the fire part that becomes decoupled.
Mm-hmm. All right. So here again, by fire suppression, it's no longer part of this process anymore. Reliably, it sounds like you're saying before white settlement, then that the fire seasons were going to be less when the moisture was greater?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
So with 450 years or so of data points, how far did you extrapolate into the future?
Well, we took what other people had done. We didn't feel that comfortable sort of trying to model it forward, given that there's, you know, some variability in what the models tell you about how much moisture there'll be or how warm it'll get. And so we just used what we knew to be out there to make inferences about the future. It does, everything says it's going to get warmer. Most of the models suggest it's going to get wetter. And what our data shows up to the present is that it's not going to make that much of a difference if it gets wetter for fire activity, because people are basically controlling fire right now.
Well, so that begs the question then, what is there in this research that humans might take up and do differently?
Yeah, that's a great question. We aren't able to control climate or weather, and so the vegetation management or working with fuel is what we have, what we can work with if we want to reduce the kind of fire effects that we're getting in these recent fires. So that's, you know, there's been 100 years of more fuel accumulating, and so we need to begin to pay serious attention to reducing that and working on that problem. Because we're not going to be able to do much about the rest.
Right. Can't change the jet stream. Can't change the temperatures, it appears, at this point. At least don't have much influence on it at the moment. Were there any particular surprises as you pulled up the numbers, Alan Taylor? I mean, this is a lot of research, a lot of data points to go through, and probably a lot of computer processing time.
Yeah, we were very surprised that the link has just disappeared. Because, you know, when it's hot, it should burn more. And when it's wet, it shouldn't burn as much. And we were just really surprised that relationship broke down, that wet years don't matter anymore.
And where has the jet stream been lately?
It is right now. It's sort of in a, California is about normal, I think, for precipitation, maybe a little above. And so it's not an extreme wet condition. It's sort of on the wet side right now. It sounds like for your weather forecast that you have good weather or have had it, but a couple weeks ago it was very, very wet across California, as you probably remember, in southern Oregon, and the jet stream was located more towards Los Angeles at that time.
Okay.
So bringing that moisture in.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, we're looking at Redding being more than 5 inches above average for precipitation just for the calendar year, not the water year. So
yep.
That's why I asked. I had the presumption then, based on what you've taught us today, that it would have been over, the jet stream would have been over Southern California.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's what it was. And, it does move on a weekly sort of basis. Or even a daily basis. So that's the way it was set up, and sounds like it might move back a little bit here. You got some wet weather coming, it sounds like, based on the forecast.
We do indeed. Their research is it went back and looked all the way back to 1571 with tree ring data called Jet Stream Dynamics, Hydroclimate, and Fire in California from 1600 CE to present. It is the work of four researchers: Eugene Wall, Eduardo Zarita, Valerie Truet, and our guest Alan Taylor, who is a professor of geography at Penn State University. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.